From Odyssey, I'm Lauren Berry, and this is the On Deadline podcast, where you get a focused look at stories from our radio newsrooms across the U.S. Today, On Deadline is looking at a question our grandparents probably wouldn't have considered. In fact, it seems to fly in the face of the American dream. So, here's the question. Is it better to rent or to buy? With high prices and high interest rates, more and more households are asking it. Being a homeowner might be a goal for many because of the long-term financial stability. However, new reports have found that renting a home is way cheaper and may actually make more sense. This report from Bankrate highlights that in all 50 of the largest U.S. metros, it's now cheaper to rent a home than it is to buy one. Bankrate's report highlighted that the average monthly mortgage payment of a median-priced home is $2,703 as of February 2024. At the same time, the typical monthly rent is $1,979. The report also revealed that in at least 21 metro areas, the difference was even greater, with mortgages sitting 50% higher than the rent. Across the board, the number is 37%. This comes as the cost of living continues to rise and shelter costs rose by 5.5% year over year in April. With more than 50% of Americans reporting in a February survey that they don't think they can afford to buy a home, what options do they really have? Alex Gailey is a Bankrate analyst who worked on the report and who joined Odyssey to share more on the findings.
What's the gap between ownership and renting in the Bay Area, and how much worse is it here than the rest of the country?
So in our analysis, we found that the gap between renting and owning on a monthly basis is around 181%, and it does top the list. So it's the most expensive in terms of buying, and it is also pretty pricey in terms of renting. And so you just see also a large gap between the two because home prices are so high.
What are some of the pros and cons to owning rather than renting, even if those numbers don't pencil out?
There is a long-term financial benefit to owning. You can build equity over time. It's something that is it's a method to build wealth over time. It's also, you know, it's a lifestyle preference. If you want to own your own home and have your own space and have a level of stability in your lifestyle, both financially and just in terms of being in the same place, then owning is for you. But really, first and foremost, before you even consider wanting to buy, you have to look at your lifestyle preferences. Do you think you'll be in the same place for several years or more than 5 years? Because if not, then renting is likely a better option for you. So you have to kind of think about the lifestyle preferences. There's a lot of hidden costs that come with home ownership that you have to consider and be financially prepared for, such as property taxes, homeowners insurance, there's maintenance and fees. You're essentially responsible for your property. And so you have to, it's a lot of responsibility. It's a lot of financial, you know, it's a lot of money, essentially. And so there's a lot to consider there if you're kind of debating the two.
That's why they call them money pits. Listen, Alex, one thing I was wondering about here is that in the old days, you know, you got an almost immediate tax benefit for buying a house. That has gone away. And was that an enticement in previous years for buying a house?
Certainly, yeah. Tax benefits are always sort of something that historically has been an incentive to buy. But unfortunately, it is something that over the years hasn't been as prevalent or has gone away. And it's something that actually has come back into conversation with the current administration, who has proposed a tax credit to create more affordable housing. So it's definitely something that I think has come back to light just in terms of the fact that affordable housing is so hard to find nowadays, really across the country.
How much are interest rates playing into this, in addition to the high cost of housing, for it to be cheaper to rent than to buy?
Housing mortgage rates are really driving a lot of these cost differences you see between renting and owning. So we've seen, we now know mortgage rates are north of 7%. They've risen dramatically over the last 2 years. And that, you know, ultimately has a huge impact on that monthly mortgage payment you're making. And so just mortgage rates alone, you see a bigger gap between renting and owning on a monthly basis on that cost. But it's also high home prices. We've been seeing price gains over the last 9 months. And it's also the fact that the market is really competitive. There's a shortage of homes available. There is ultimately a lot more demand than there is supply right now when it comes to wanting to buy a home.
Thank you. This isn't the first time the housing market has been chaotic. In fact, many listeners probably remember the market crash of 2008. However, the market hasn't crashed yet like it did back then. Still, historically high interest rates paired with ever-skyrocketing home prices are a double whammy for young people trying to get a foothold in the market. And there's no end in sight. Lawrence Yoon, the chief economist at the National Association of Realtors, shared with Business Insider last month that prospective buyers might be faced with bad news as prices are expected to rise this year with more competition in the market. There's simply not enough supply, Yoon explained. So the economics of supply and demand, if there's a shortage, prices simply cannot crash. Peter Hunt from Hunt Real Estate shared more on mortgage rates and what's happening across the country with Odyssey.
We're talking about mortgage rates throughout the country continuing to climb, this time for the fifth consecutive week. The last time they were this high was November of 2023, which is not that long ago, but it seemed like we were on a little bit of a downward trend. And then, Peter, we're back up again, 7.22% on average, the new high for 2024. It's leaving a lot of people, especially first-time home buyers, saying, what gives?
What gives is it's very simple. Well, it isn't so simple, but the fact of the matter is we have had a period of time here from the beginning of the pandemic really until this year where we have steadily increased our spending at the federal government level, national government level, excuse me. And in the process of doing so, we've created these structural deficits, which have to be funded somehow. They're funded through the bond market. The government sells bonds so that they can fund their deficit. The key bond that we look at every day in the mortgage business is the 10-year T-bill, and that's been rising fairly steadily in the last few weeks. For a long time, it was hovering around 4%, which meant that if you take that 10-year T-bill and you add 2.5%, maybe as much as 3%, depending on which direction it's going, you'll get the 30-year fixed rate average of that day. Right now, as you say, it's around 7.25. I've seen it as high as 7.4 this morning already. But the 10-year T-bill is actually coming down a little bit. So we're anticipating that rates will start to dip down a very little bit this week.
For a lot of these first-time home buyers, they've been waiting for some opportunity to jump in, for either home prices to go down, for rates to go down. They're still both going up. It's kind of crazy to think that, you know, one hasn't led to the other falling just a little bit. For these people who have been waiting, is it time to just kind of jump in? You know, not to say throw your budget out the window, but are you going to be waiting for forever if you don't jump in now?
I've told people all along that anybody who waits in conditions like this, low inventory, relatively, I think the relative interest rates have been relatively stable, although they appear much higher than they were prior to the pandemic. But long story short, we've got a situation here where you wait and you lose. How much will prices go up in this country over the course of the next year? Fannie Mae's predicting that they're going to go up 4% this year. And just a few months ago, they were predicting almost flat. They're recognizing, Fannie Mae, one of the largest purchasers of mortgages in this country, they recognize that the situation isn't going to improve dramatically in terms of inventory. So those people that want to buy a house need to be active, which means that you've got to compete, and which may mean that you have to that you may run into a situation where you're one of several buyers for a home. We're still seeing that today. We're still seeing multiple offers in what I would describe as the big middle of the market, and that varies from market to market, but where the average sale price in the community most closely represents that middle market.
Then there's this. With the cost of food, gas, vacations, cars, and everything else under the sun far outpacing wage growth, younger Americans are finding themselves borrowing more than their counterparts. Recently released data from the credit bureau TransUnion showed that the average credit card balance for 22 to 24-year-olds was $2,834 in the last quarter of 2023. Compared to millennials during the same period in 2013, that number is 23% higher. Bloomberg reporter Paula Cachero spoke with Odyssey about the data and what it means for today's young adults.
Why are younger people being straddled with so much debt?
Obviously, a lot of young people today we're transitioning into an adulthood, into the pandemic-induced recession, and shortly after they were hit by, you know, inflation and cost of living rising at the fastest pace in decades. You know, all of this came at a time that was critical in their financial development. And, you know, if you think about, you know, when you first graduated high school and college and how much money you had saved up and how much you were earning, you know, they haven't had that much time to build up savings and, you know, have had less time to, you know, grow their earnings. So they've had to increasingly rely on credit to afford these higher costs of living.
This debt, I would imagine, hurts their credit scores, yet they still get approved for additional credit cards?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the interesting things that we talked to TransUnion about, who is a credit bureau, is, you know, during the pandemic, a lot of experts and people in the credit markets were really encouraged by, you know, reports that everyday Americans were able to build up a record amount of savings. And, you know, so at that time, you know, they allowed more people to access credit because American consumers were paying down their debts and, you know, seemed to be managing really well financially. You know, however, you know, when these card issuers, you know, tend to do that, they're typically expanding the market to people who traditionally have had, you know, less access to credit and are maybe, you know, haven't dealt with credit before. And now we're seeing that as, you know, people's budgets are tightened, that these folks are now struggling to pay them back. And so we're just seeing the pandemic, we saw a huge increase in the access to credit in ways that we, you know, haven't seen in a long time.
And before I let you go, what about student loans? It's kind of the elephant in the room, I would imagine.
Yeah, definitely. You know, interestingly, because of the, you know, pandemic student loan pause, a lot of people were able to pay down debts in other areas. And I think that we actually still don't really know how people are handling their student debt loans because of the Biden administration's on-ramp program. So, you know, even though payments started back up and bills were due starting last year, they're not recording late payments to credit bureaus. So we don't really know how people are handling them. They're trying to give people time to get accustomed to having that as a part of their budget. So, you know, when that program ends and, you know, come October or later this year, we'll have a better sense of, you know, how that's weighing on Americans' budgets as well.
This Wednesday, the Consumer Price Index report from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics showed that inflation increased again in April by 0.3%. So, to rent or to buy? We asked that at the beginning of the show, and here's the answer. It's up to you. I know. But before you make the decision, take into consideration these factors. Fortune magazine says that while renting was once considered throwing money away and owning was a worthy investment, today's economy has made the answer more nuanced. The decision to rent or to buy depends on where you want to live, how much it costs, and how long you plan to stay. A 2023 study, for instance, found that renters save $900,540 on average in California over a 30-year period. At the same time, the escalating cost of rent is a concern for people in the market. But rent prices are expected to come down, as there are nearly a million multifamily units that will be coming onto the market over the next year or two. That's a record high, and it should drive down prices. Home ownership comes with more stability in payments and a payoff at some point, but it also comes with a sometimes insurmountable number of upfront costs. Property taxes, insurance, not to mention the down payment itself, and all those little fix-it jobs you'll need to do. So do your homework and make the right decision for you. This show is produced by Joe Heady, Christy Strauser, and by me. I'm Lauren Berry, and I want to say thanks for listening to On Deadline, Odyssey's serving of a top news story just for you. Subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts to stay informed.